So as I said, this is a talk describing a project which is getting started with IBM and we've been working on it, so I'll just go to and try to describe it. So the motivation here is we've been playing for a while in the world of program analysis for bug finding. And this has caught on somewhat in the popular media actually a while ago. These are both from The Economist. The first one was in 2003 saying, boy, using the program analysis or using software to find bugs would be a good idea. And actually last month in March 6, 2008, they wrote basically the same article saying that would be a good idea. So the question is, what are we doing? Why? And so we've had a lot of, I'm at IBM TJ Watson, of experience using bug finding tools, writing them ourselves, and deploying them with customers, internal IBM groups. And so our experience, so what's wrong with what we've been doing and what's wrong with the experience using current bug finding tools? And the number one answer we get from talking to our customers is false positives, whether it's 80% or 50%. It's just using the current tools that are out there, we're giving them a lot of false positives, that is reporting issues or saying that there might be a bug when it's either something that isn't a bug or something they don't care about. And the reason for this is, well, partly it's because of the kind of analysis technology that's being used in these tools. And so our natural inclination, so my group has done a lot of work in scalable precise analysis and alias analysis and things like that. So perhaps our natural gut instinct is to say, okay, we need to invest more, especially in research, for precise, scalable interprocedural analysis so that we can do a better analysis job and get rid of these false positives. But let's have a little thought experiment and think about, and the truth is, of course, as many of you know, that by itself, of course, wouldn't get us there. And really, still these tools wouldn't be changing the world, and we'd probably have the same Economist article again in 5 years. So as many of you know, even if we had infinitely precise analysis, the real question is what sort of specifications can these bug-finding tools check? What kind of bugs can they find? Now, in the literature and also in the tools that are out there, the vast majority of the kind of things that these bug-finding tools will find are null dereferences and buffer overflows, which are certainly important, especially in the C world, because they can be security violations and so forth. And then miscellaneous programming rules, like always call iterator dot has next before you call next, or don't put a quote in your string unless you're really sure about it. But if you go in, it's a good exercise to go and read bug tracking systems from, for example, open source projects, and you'll see that the vast majority of the critical or blocking defects that are out there that report in the bug tracking systems, today's tools just have no hope of finding. And the reason they have no hope of finding them is not because of limitations of technology, and it's not because interprocedural analysis is hard, it's because the tools don't know what specification they're supposed to check. And sometimes it's just something like an invariant. For example, if you have code here that blows up if a parameter is null, the tool doesn't know what sort of invariants, as we heard this morning, are assumed at the beginning of the method. We don't have a specification of what a legal calling environment is, and so the tool just doesn't know what to do. And then there are, of course, richer specifications, which might be application specific, such as forms are supposed to resize correctly no matter what font you're using, or confidentiality and integrity requirements as far as keeping data private and so forth. So we have this iceberg, that's for sure, and right now if we're trying to attack the stuff above the iceberg, the true answer is we're not going to make a huge impact on the world unless we can do something to attack the vast majority of this iceberg, to do something about these things under the waterline. And so the goal of this project is to start to push down a little bit and see what we can do. So more specifically, if we think of what these checking tools do is they take in a program, some code, some manifestation of the program, and a specification, and checks it, and it spits out things. Now, I'm not going to worry about verification for the purposes of this talk, but when the tool spits out something, it can mean precisely one of three things. It can mean the code is buggy, in which case the tool has actually done its job, or it can mean the specification was buggy, the tool was checking something which wasn't exactly what the programmer had intended, or it could be a false alarm because of some limitations of analysis, the tool just got it wrong. And those are, I claim, the three possibilities. So our goals are to build a tool. First of all, if we're willing to give up on soundness from a verification point of view, if we're willing to be incomplete as far as finding the bugs, then we observe that if we can spit out a concrete witness, for example, a JUnit test that demonstrates a particular behavior, then at least we can say it's not a false alarm. If the analysis can actually spit out a test which crashes or does what it says is a violation of specification, at least we don't have to worry about false alarms. So now it's a question of, is the code buggy or is the specification inadequate? And so the second part of what we're trying to do is do something to get richer specifications into this loop. Now, there are a lot of specification languages out there, things like Z and all sorts of things, Alloy, that have been out there for years and years and years and years, and the vast majority of people in industry or in open source world or in academia just don't use them. And the reason they don't use them, it's not because they're stupid, it's because they've done a cost-benefit trade-off, and they decided that the effort that they need to use these specifications doesn't justify the benefit that they get out of them. So if we're going to get these richer specifications into mainstream development, we need to both reduce the cost of writing these specifications and increase the benefits that people observe. What do they get out of writing a specification? So the way that we plan to attempt to both reduce costs and increase benefits. So to reduce costs, it's much in the spirit of, say, what we heard this morning from Opminer, is to have analysis try to do as much of the work in writing the specifications as we can. So try to infer specifications as much as we can. Now, in our particular approach, we intend to involve the developer, try to make it as easy as possible for the developer to interact with these specifications, to accept or reject them. For the beginning, we're also going to manifest the specifications as assertions in the source language just to lower the barrier of entry, so nobody has to learn a different language to express their specifications. And to increase the benefits, it has to go back with the bug finding. If we can actually generate counterexamples, actual examples that people can run that violate these specifications, then the hypothesis is that people will think that if they actually see these things in their bugs, that they'll actually think it's worth their benefit to go through this exercise of specifying things. So at this point, I'm sure many of you are thinking, I've heard this story before. And the truth is, this is nothing new in general. And lots of projects have attacked one part of this or another. And as I said, this is just a work in progress report, so we don't have any results yet, so I'm not going to stand here and claim that we're better than the grand sum of all of these, but I can, later on, we can talk about specific ones, and as I go through the talk, I'll show you some of the approaches that we're using, and then if you want to, we can go back and say how it might differ from other ones. Your project, of course, was egregiously admitted. I know Opminer was one to begin with, and there are certainly others. Actually, I'm going to multitask as we... I plan to have a demo in about 2 slides, but that means I have to fire off the clips. So I'm going to multitask. Because my...
Show 2 slides in tonight.
Yeah, I hope I'll spend a lot of time on these 2 slides. So I'll get that started. So to recap, here comes the big run-up to the demo. I hope it doesn't take too long. So today, if you're using these tools, basically what we do is... The tool, which is the analysis box in this picture, takes in some code and some specification of what's good and what's bad. And these are general rules, whether they're null pointer exceptions or out-of-bound exceptions. And usually in tools like FindBugs or many commercial tools, they're generic pattern matching things. And the analysis analyzes the code, tries to find cases where the rules are violated, spits out a report, and then the hapless developer has to sift through this report and spend 2.5 minutes or more to figure out which of these things are real, which ones are not, and what is he going to do with it, and is he going to put it in a bug tracking system or throw it in the trash or whatnot. So at a very high level, we plan to change the workflow simply by having the analysis spit out, well, not the report, fine, but the report will actually come with concrete tests that they can run, and it'll also spit out suggested specifications for the developer to accept or reject. And if this vision works, what we hope to get is a virtuous feedback loop where, so if the analysis is suggesting specifications that go to the developer, if the developer accepts these specifications, they feed back into the analysis, and then maybe the next time around, the analysis will find a violation of that specification, which can report as a problem. And so if it all works happily, we'll be getting more and more specifications into the loop, more and more things, and everybody will be happy. So at this point, you'll see I presciently put the question mark after the demo, but we'll give it a try. So the idea of this demo is just to show you an idea of what this workflow might look like without claiming that any of the technology here is rocket science. And I had had this all set up, of course, but before my machine crashed. I wonder what my next slide is. Maybe I can multitask again.
Yeah.
Sure.
Why not?
Sure. So the technology, so basically the structure of the system, I'll just leave it on this projection for now, is basically has three pillars of technology, which are, in theory, can be independent, can be mixed and matched. And I'll show you later some specific instantiations of what we're looking at. I hear you. I know you want attention. All right. So let's go back to that. So the idea, at least, so as I said, the idea was that the tool will suggest specifications and then they'll go into a feedback loop. And the developer will accept or reject them. But the truth is, you know, we're going to hide this all under the covers. Our specification language, all right, we have a theory and first order logic, but the developer doesn't want to know about that. It's never going to hear about that. The idea is they could come in here and I'll just analyze one class for now. We have a little tool called here, Did You Know? And this is just going to do some specification inference. Hopefully, if my machine doesn't page too much, this will take about 5 seconds. And I'd say that it'll take 10 seconds, 15.
So, what's it doing exactly? Can you tell us?
What am I doing?
What is it doing right now?
What it is doing right now is I selected a class. It's symbolic weakness precondition over all paths in the methods and those things and generate and spitting out a human readable form of the weakness precondition, which is exposed at the method entry, which is where we are here. Now, for those who don't live and breathe logic, I'll go back into that a little deeper in the rest of the talk. So, effectively, what we have here are the partial specification of behavior of this class. And so this is our dialogue with the user where we're saying, so when I'm programming with Eclipse, I'm one of these people that I can't stand having warnings in the problem taskbar and I have to kill all them. So I'm sort of banking that this thing, that by spinning things up here in this view, that at least anal developers will be motivated to shut this tool up. So the way to shut it up is to come in here and take one of these partial specifications so we can look at it and say, all right, the tool is telling me that if x equals 1 and y equals 2 and z equals 3, this method throws a null pointer exception. And we look at the code, yes, that is true. So, you know, let's suppose this is not a bug. We have to somehow instantiate a specification saying that this is what I intended. And so it comes up and it basically what the tool now is suggesting ways for the programmer by selecting one of these fixes, they're effect putting in specifications saying what they intended. So maybe, yeah, they intended to throw a null pointer exception so they could say it's okay. Maybe they just said, all right, the sum of this whole precondition, x equals 1 and y equals 2 and z equals 3, I know this can't happen, I don't want to hear about it, and so they can accept that. Or maybe they want to say something slightly stronger. If they say something slightly stronger, for example, if they say just x does not equal 1, that now I've actually got information that the analysis wasn't able to figure by itself, and now we can hope to do this feedback loop. And so let's suppose I want to do the stronger one. I say x does not equal 1, and I accept this. All right, so it's been manifest as effectively an assertion in the code. And now the next time I analyze the code, it'll try to find violations of this thing. Later on in the talk, I'm going to talk about test case generation. Let me just, I'll do it for this whole package. For now, I'm just going to try to fire off some fuzz testing of this package because I want to show you some of the difficulties with test case generation that we're looking at. So we're looking at Java code, of course, object-oriented APIs, and the problem, which of course we're not the first ones to observe, is if you're going to do test case generation, there's a whole setup or environment problem. How do you navigate the APIs just to get the objects and get the environment in the right state to create this precondition? So if the precondition was x equals 1 and y equals 2, it might be hard to get, you know, you have to figure out what sequence of API calls you're going to invoke to get in that precondition. And sometimes this can be hard. For example, we have, here's an object that's a list, and maybe it takes a data item, and if we look at data, this has to come with a list and so forth. So now we have a difficulty in test case generation. How do we navigate this API to create the test? And just to show you, let's see if we have any useful tests yet. So this was just fuzz testing. This wasn't using any symbolic analysis to generate the test, but we can, what I'm going to show you later is some of the technology we use to try to find a sequence of API calls to do the test. So just keep that in mind, that this is what I claim is a hard problem in test case generation, and I'm going to talk about this some more later in the talk. So having gone through the demo, how am I on time?
15 minutes to end with questions.
Okay, great.
10 minutes, only 5 minutes for questions.
Great. So once again, so for the rest of the talk, now I'm going to talk about the actual technology and the way we're approaching this, and the particular ways we're trying to attach this. So as I said, we consider this as three separate pieces which may or may not share the underlying technology, and which you can plug and play. So there's specification acquisition, which in some sense is saying what are good program states and what are bad ones. Once you have a definition of what are good and bad program states, you can run some sort of tool, if you like, to try to identify program states which look interesting. So maybe a bug-finding tool will say there might be a bug here, say a sound, or a verifier might say there might be problems here. Or maybe if you're from the testing community, maybe you say all program states are, or program states according to your coverage metric or so forth, you can do that. We're more interested in bug finding. So usually these program states will be some bug that we think might happen. And then there's witness generation, which in our case is generating an actual unit test. We use the word unit test loosely, but just generating an actual test you can run that reaches one of these goal states. So there's lots of ways to do this, and many people, of course, have worked on different ways. If we're really going to make this work in the way I described, you know, the challenges, we don't think all the problems are solved yet, and the challenges are, first of all, so we're targeting, you know, web applications, Java server applications. These are extremely large codes that run on complicated frameworks with a lot of dynamic programming features, and so far, at least, there's a lot of really hard challenges, especially with the issues of concrete test generation over very large code bases, dealing with this API problem. So there's a lot of issues with analysis technology, which are very hard. So I'll talk about that a bit. And then the other one, which is really, can we really learn powerful specifications, and can we express them through some GUI in a way that a human can relate to and give feedback? And so there are all sorts of different kinds of specifications, ranging from, you know, simple invariants up to full functional specifications. And once again, it gets back to the iceberg picture. You know, some of these on the left, I would say, they're a little easier. We can hope to get to them. As we move further to the right, it becomes harder and harder to solve these problems, but also the corresponding reward of doing it increases. So let me talk now, get into program analysis technology a little bit. I'm going to talk about, we've been doing some work on symbolic search by a weakest precondition, and we're using this for inferring specifications and for generating witnesses. So let me give you an overview of the approach we're using. So for those of you who don't know, just a quick introduction to weakest precondition. This is a backwards analysis. So if we wanted to find out under what conditions does this method foo go boom at this program point. So we see that this is a backwards symbolic analysis. So we know precisely semantics of every statement in this language. We can define that according to a weakest precondition operator. And so we start by seeding a symbolic formula. We want to reach this point, saying the predicate true, we want the predicate true to be true at the, true to hold at this program point. And then we push it backwards through the method according to the weakest precondition semantics. So in order to get here, then we must be in a state here where y is greater than 9. In order to get to a state where y is greater than 9 here, before that statement, we must have been in a state where x minus 3 is greater than 9. And we can go ahead and push it backwards, and when we get to the exposed API, that's a condition which will drive us to the state under test. So what we're doing is we're going to push these weakest preconditions back to method entries, and then we're utilizing an SMT solver. This is a particular flavor of theorem prover, which deal with these kind of formulas very well. I won't get into the details. But using an SMT solver, we can use it in a loop to simplify these formulas to try to get to specifications. So the simplification is important to try to get something that humans can get their hands on. And also we can use the SMT solver to find, well, first of all, you'd use it to find out if there's a satisfying assignment. Is there any assignment to X in this case which will trip this condition? And if the solver says that there is a satisfying assignment, you can use that as a basis for a test case. So for example, in this case, foo12 is a test case that will get you here. So we use the SMT solver for both issues. Now, as I said, that sounds easy enough for one path, but there are many difficult issues in scaling this to the kind of programs we've been talking about. So the approach that we're trying to push on this is we're formulating this backwards symbolic analysis with something called the RHS algorithm. So we're almost treating it like a data flow or an abstract interpretation over a domain, which are symbolic formula, except, of course, I wouldn't call it abstract interpretation because we're not actually doing any abstraction. But the idea, anyway, is that we have a fairly well-engineered solver that does designed to do this kind of interprocedural data flow analysis, and we're going to reuse this work to encode this problem to do this weakest precondition, and by encoding it in the right way, we're going to explore all the paths at once, just as if we were doing a data flow with an abstraction, which was an under approximation. So if you're not familiar with tabulation, I'll just walk through an example. So suppose we're analyzing this example, and we want to get to this bad state boom here. So we start pushing back weakest precondition, we get this formula here. Now we have a procedure call, so now we're into interprocedural analysis. So what we have to do, so we're going to call this method min over here. We have to push some part of this formula, at least, to the exit of this method min. 5 minutes, okay. So since I've got 5 minutes, I'll go through it fairly quickly. So we can push the formula to the exit, push it to the entry of the callee, and then the essence of tabulation is once you've reached, in this case, the entry from the exit, you write down in the table and save this as a partial transfer function or as a partial predicate transformer, which represents this method. So if you're looking for a phi which says r is greater than 3, I don't have to analyze this method min again. I know that any assignment of this at the entry will satisfy what I'm looking for. So we can continue this example. We can take one of these cases and push it backwards some more. The next call doesn't actually do anything interesting in min, so I won't go through the details. But the key part here is here we have the same formula, x is greater than 3, which will get translated to r greater than 3 at the entry. And now we got lucky. We can reuse the work we've done in computing the weakest preconditions for the callee and go forward. And so we're able to reuse these in the spirit of interprocedural analysis. So this sounds good. This is how we've engineered it. Whether this really works or not is still an open question. If this does work, it's great, because what we've gotten then, this tabulation algorithm and the way we're using it is fully automatic. So if this does work, what we have is a fully automatic, modular way to do this kind of symbolic analysis, which would be great. But the question is, does it really work? And it really gets to how much can you reuse these tables and these summaries you've computed. So those are some of the open options we're looking at. We can maintain some sort of database of partial transfer functions for the libraries, and there are a lot of cases which come up repeatedly. A key issue in making this whole thing work is the question of frame conditions or separation. You have a formula coming in, and basically it's going to split, and part of it's going to go into the callee, and part of it's going to stay in the caller. And you have to figure out which parts you can split. And the more effective you are in figuring out what the callee can affect and what it can't, the more reuse you're going to get, and the more effective your module analysis will be. So the question of reuse is very important. I'm going to go through the rest of this material extremely quickly. One of the big challenges in all this is, of course, exponential explosion. Even without loops, which I won't even talk about, there's exponential explosion. Now, if you played in this field, I mean, everybody knows about exponential number of paths going through a method. It's also been observed when you're doing this substitution kind of precondition that substitution can lead to exponential explosion, and this example will. I'll just note quickly that we've also run into some other ones which aren't discussed too much, things like dynamic dispatch and things with aliasing and destructive updates with stores also lead to these kinds of exponential explosions, and these need to be dealt with as well. So I'm not going to have time to go through this example, but let me just say that the way we're going to try to deal with these exponential explosion is by effectively putting in a merge function or a join function in abstract interpretation to try to ramp down, to try to find commonalities between different formula and program points. And if we're that together with search heuristics, effectively ordering constraints over these over the chaotic iteration you're doing in here, hopefully we'll be able to ramp down a lot of this exponential explosion. So I'll just leave it at that and come back to it offline if you like. Just very quickly, let me touch on this issue of generating API conformant test cases. So suppose we want to make this method crash. We'll get a weakest precondition saying if foo is called where b.f equals 1, foo will crash. That's fine, but the problem, or the difficulty we have is that, in fact, this class bar, in effect, if you look at this code, enforces a class invariant that, in fact, f cannot be 1, f can only be 0 or 2. So a lot of work will just assume, okay, somebody's going to write down a class invariant saying that f equals 0 or 2, and we'll use that. The problem is, in the real world, nobody's writing down any invariants for you, so you have to discover them. So the way we are attacking this is we have something we call a universal driver. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually write a Java program which encodes all reasonable ways of driving this test. And we do it in such a way so that we can search it with the same symbolic technology. And there's a very nice property which comes out that if you do a partial evaluation of this driver, you get a test. So I'll try to give you a quick example. So here's just some code which would represent a universal driver. So we won't have time to go through all the details. But you have to trust me that this interarray here, x, which is the parameter to this drive foo method, effectively the assignment, the value of this integer array encodes all the different ways of creating a bar object and then calling foo. Okay, so you can look at the details offline, but trust me that that's, we've deliberately constructed this driver method with that form. So we can throw this method itself at the whole machinery to try to find the precondition. And we throw this at the SMT solver. In this case, it will discover that there's no way to satisfy this formula, v dot f equals 1, and so it'll effectively discover that there's no way to generate this crash, effectively encoding in the class invariant. However, if suppose we change this code so that this invariant no longer holds, so here I put in a method which will create a bar with an arbitrary value of f, so now we can get a b with b dot f equals 1. So if we throw the same universal driver and do the same symbolic analysis over this, at this point, the SAT solver will actually give us a satisfying assignment. In this case, the values of the integer array are 2, 2, 1. And this effectively represents, if you run this drive foo method with the integer array 2, 2, 1, you'll get the program which calls make with y equals 1 and then invokes foo. And the very nice thing is it's very simple to simply partially evaluate this driver program with respect to this integer array 2, 2, 1. And what you get is a very nice looking test case. And so that's the technology we're using for test cases. So this is very nice. It's a very nice story. It handles all the invariants and everything. The biggest risk with this is it assumes that you've solved the problem of doing this weakest precondition over very large search spaces. So in effect, we've reduced the problem back to the original problem, which is how are we going to do this scalable symbolic search. So I'm just about done. There's lots of other things which need to be done. I'll go through this. So I didn't mention loops, but loops are a big problem. We're looking at some ways to apply abstraction to guide search and to skip loops and recursion as well. We want to put in a lot of speculation and dynamic checking. Since we're actually generating tests in the end, we can actually run every code so we can do experiments dynamically. Someone in the style of these directed testings or concolic testing, such things. Although, of course, we're going backwards, and so we're in a little bit different space. There's a big open issue about how we get readable or usable specifications from these weakest precondition formulas, and it's a lot harder than just finding satisfying assignments. We also have to find the right kind of formula simplification. We have to deal with lifting predicates from, you know, individual predicates to predicates over larger scopes, like class invariants and things like that. And then, as I said, there's lots of different technologies which can be applied for this specification acquisition. There's ways to use tests that exist as specifications of behavior. We had a paper about how you can mine client codes, much like we heard this morning from Andres, mining the web, and lots of other stuff. So, last slide is just, so our, as I've showed you, it's very half-baked. This is what we're working on. Our philosophy is, you know, this is really a tool-driven, practical project first. So really the goal is we want to build a tool which is actually useful enough for us to actually adopt it. So I mean, I've looked at none of the tools that I've seen out there that I've tried are actually useful enough for me to use it. So I'm actually looking for a tool that I can use. So our first goal is just to build a tool that we will use ourselves, and then our hypothesis, if we find it useful, maybe somebody else will too. So that's the story. So I'd very much like your feedback later on the day.
We can take time. We're just pushing everything 5 minutes. We'll push the morning 5 minutes. We can take time for at least one or two questions, because that was your point, right?
Yes. Okay, I was going to say, ask first, the combinatorial explosions, the conditions that you talked about, how often do they really come up in real code? And that's part A. And part B is, how bad are loops? What?
All right, so the answer to the combinatorial explosion is all the time. all the time. Every store to every put field in Java, every Y.F, every dynamic dispatch. If you think about it, then, you know, every time you have sort of this diamond thing, you get a combinatorial explosion. Loops, the problem with all this is, remember, we're not doing any abstraction at all. So if you just apply this without any tricks, you'll run forever. This analysis will be very happy to count through a loop forever, or up to max int. So in an abstract interpretation, you use widening operators to effectively jump up in your lattice. In this kind of, since we actually want concrete solutions that work, you can't jump. So it's a lot harder. Now what people do, so lots of people do various kinds of a variance of unroll a fixed number of times. If the loop goes through one, two, or three times, then I'll find it, and if not, I'm out of luck. Other people, there are lots of things they mix, can call it the Synergy project. Are we going to hear about Synergy later today? I don't know.
No.
No. There's other things. I can refer you to Synergy and directed testing and Kakalik, which try to use concrete execution along with symbolic execution to get over these loops and things like that. So that's great. That only works forward, and it only works if you actually can run. Sorry. Okay. And it only works if you can actually run.
Loops are a big problem.
Loops are a tremendous problem. But this is not, loops have been.
They've been a problem for
a while. I could say loops have been. Is it fair to say loops are the fundamental problem of computers? I don't know. Maybe.
Recursion. Useful.
Let's put it this way. If we didn't have recursion.
Without them, can't live with them, right?
If we didn't have recursion, I think most of what we're doing would be irrelevant. Life would be easy.
So I have one question more about tying it back to the high level.
Yes.
Objectives we have, but you think about the iceberg and the deeper bugs that you want to, specifications you want to find. When you start your analysis, where do you start from? Do you start with assertions that are inside the program and propagate them back to, you know, preconditions that functions should satisfy? Is that what you start with? And the follow-up question is that enough for you to find those deep bugs, like, you know, I can't send my ATM to somebody?
Yeah. So the answer is, the high level answer is, I'm not religious. Any technology which will work. So as I said, it's kind of independent, and you can plug in any. I can imagine a technology where it emails Sriram to ask for a specification, gets it back. As long as I can express it in a language, I can check it. So that's the answer. As far as this particular weakest precondition, as I said, I think, yes, starting with assertions and trying to find slightly stronger assertions, that'll get you a little bit down the waterline. It'll never get you down, I don't think, to confidentiality and integrity. On the other hand, there are other techniques which will. Maybe, you know, there are, you know, people are sometimes willing to put specifications of this is confidential or this is integrity. Or the thing with the forms, my other example was about forms that might resize. You know, there are APIs, like if it's a SWT application or a particular Windows thing, Avalon or whatever they call it these days, GUI application, you know, it comes with, most of the applications we deal with today use very rich frameworks, and these frameworks you could imagine somebody actually putting in richer specifications. So the answer is, I don't think there's a silver bullet. I don't think what we're doing is going to be a silver bullet. And that's why I'd like to stay, at least part of the project is a little agnostic in that wherever we get the specifications from, we'll do it. And this symbolic search will find some kinds, but certainly not all kinds.
I think we're going to have to stop the questions there. Thank you, Steve.
Okay.